I'm Palmer Payne. Geraldine Ferraro, on her first solo campaign swing as vice presidential candidate, flew to President Reagan's home state this afternoon. She arrived in Sacramento paraphrasing a New York newspaper publisher of the last century.
I really have always thought Horace Greeley was so smart when he said, "Go west, young woman, go west." Stretched it just a little bit, right?
Ferraro, earlier in Washington, modified her previous promise to reveal all of her family finances. She told reporters her husband refuses to disclose his income tax returns, fearing it will hurt his real estate business. President Reagan's office in Santa Barbara quotes him as saying, "Never say never about raising taxes. Allowing some levies may be hiked if wasteful federal spending is not curbed." He continues to say he would oppose higher personal income taxes if he's reelected. I'll have more after this.
You don't have to smoke if you want to quit. You can help break the cigarette habit with Bantron smoking deterrent tablets.
I was a smoker for 25 years. My doctor recommended that I give it up, and I really wanted to. So I bought Bantron, followed the directions, and was able to stop.
I smoked up to a pack and a half a day. Then I tried Bantron. On my first day, I cut down, and within a few weeks, I quit all the way.
Clinical tests showed that as Bantron goes to work for you, the number of cigarettes smoked decreases, and the more you want to stop, the more Bantron helps.
It's been 3 months since I quit, and I don't want to start smoking again. I've even been bragging to my friends about how Bantron helped.
I tried to quit once before, but I only made it for about, 2-3 days. But now I've got to where I don't even need a cigarette. So I think Bantron really helps. At least it helped me.
Bantron smoking deterrent tablets help you break the cigarette habit. Use only as directed.
One of the worst fall allergy seasons on record is expected, with a bumper crop of ragweed on the way due to lots of rain this summer. Immunology expert Sidney Friedlander of Detroit says ragweed is the big allergy offender in 80% of the country. Not only is the rain causing the plants to grow larger, Dr. Friedlander says they are spreading to places they've not grown in recent years. Areas free of the weed include the southern tip of Florida, California, and parts of Oregon and Washington west of the Cascade Mountains. Oil industry analyst Dan Lundberg says gasoline prices are usually expected to rise when consumption increases and supplies are reduced, but it's not been happening. For the 13th straight week, the price of a gallon of gas has dropped, this time by half a penny, to a little over $1.17 on the average overall. ABC Sheila Cast of Washington reports one consumer group fearing an escalation of energy costs wants the government to look into the possibility.
After edging down for 3 months, world prices of oil started to inch up again 10 days ago. And analysts say much of that is due to American oil companies cooperating with OPEC to reduce shipments of oil from the Middle East. The Citizen Labor Energy Coalition, a consumers group, says the oil companies may be violating U.S. antitrust laws by coordinating actions to reduce oil supplies and push up prices. The coalition has asked the Justice Department to investigate.
Sheila Cast in Washington. A motorist was killed in San Francisco in the collision of his auto and a cable car this afternoon. Witnesses say it appeared the man waited for the Hyde Street car to get halfway up a hill, stepped on the gas, and rammed it. The brake operator, called a grip man, was knocked off, causing the cable car to careen down two blocks. About 20 people were injured. Plastic bullets fired by police killed one man and injured several other people in Belfast, Northern Ireland today. Officers were trying to arrest a New York lawyer who defied a British government ban on visiting the troubled area. Martin Galvin got away as police charged the headquarters of the political front of the Irish Republican Army. Galvin is an official of a New York group that raises money for the IRA. Israel's Defense Minister Moshe Arens says opposition to Jews living in predominantly Arab territory smacks of racism. He spoke in opposition to the views of the Labour Party that objected last week to government approval of four Jewish families moving into mobile homes in Hebron. The Palestinian group says it's responsible for the killing of an Israeli soldier last week in the occupied West Bank of the Jordan River. Radio Israel said the Democratic Front for Liberation of Palestine, based in Syria, supported by Moscow, claims to have killed two soldiers that it had kidnapped. This is ABC News. Bantam Books is sprinting to publish a paperback about Olympic quadruple gold medal winner Carl Lewis less than a week after he went into the record books. High Speed Presses in Chicago will run off 250,000 copies of this instant book next Thursday. It'll sell for $2.95. Bantam got into the Guinness Book of World Records 4 years ago when it produced the story of the 1980 U.S. Olympic ice hockey team, the fastest produced book in history. The 160-page manuscript for the Lewis book won't be finished until tomorrow. Similar quickies have been done by Bantam about jockey Stevie Cawthon and L.A. Dodgers pitcher Fernando Valenzuela.
From ABC News, World News This Week. I'm John Grimes, ABC News. Listen.
We're seeing the end, I hope, to some of the partisan political bickering that's been going on.
The real winners in this are children.
We have no plans for, nor will I allow any plans for, a tax increase.
I'd like to see a debate between Ronald Reagan and George Bush.
They are classic examples of a Soviet forgery or disinformation operation.
You can't give $180 million to a bunch of veterans and expect them to go away.
In a moment, the people and stories that made this week's World News.
I, Fatima, can see the future. I see, yes, the crystal tells me it's a very good time for financial matters.
Like joining the payroll savings plan?
Who?
You know, buying U.S. savings bonds with a little deduction each payday.
Oh, sure, bonds. My father used to buy them, but I'm talking big bucks here, Buster, and big returns like in money market. Now, you may have to come up with a few grand, but my cousin has this gold mine.
Bonds have changed.
We all get older.
They now have a variable interest rate, so anyone with $25 can share in the higher returns of the money market. No limit on how high the rate can go.
Sure, but rates fall, right? This is a sure thing.
Bonds also have a guaranteed minimum.
I see this great opportunity.
Bonds are an opportunity without risk. You'd better look again.
Well, it was a little hazy. It's smog, you know. Ah, there, it's clear. Just like I said, a good time to take stock in America and buy bonds. My fee's $25, or a $50 bond is nice.
A public service of U.S. Savings Bonds and the Advertising Council.
Congress adjourned Friday for a little R&R before the Republican convention in Dallas later this month. But before the lawmakers left, they passed several major pieces of legislation, which make it pretty clear Washington is becoming more and more aware of the growing political power of women. Wednesday, the House gave unanimous final approval to a bill which cracks down on parents behind in their child support payments. New Jersey Republican Marge Raukma was one of the original supporters of the measure.
This legislation will remedy the problem of the scofflaws who defy the law, abandon their moral and legal obligations to their children, and it establishes the responsibilities of both the states and the federal authorities in the enforcement of court-ordered child support payments.
Sponsors say $4 billion in child support money goes unpaid every year in the U.S. This bill enables state and local governments to attach the wages of an offending parent, even withhold income tax refunds to make sure the support is paid. Colorado Representative Pat Schroeder was one of those who spoke in favor of the bill.
The real winners in this are children. So many people want to portray this as a male versus female issue. It isn't at all. It's really a children's issue, and the children are the one who don't have the voice and can't really go for the enforcement.
Health and Human Services Secretary Margaret Heckler called it landmark legislation.
The new law puts teeth into the child support enforcement program, and therefore this law is going to have more bite.
The bill now goes to President Reagan for his signature. Another major reform act that passed both houses this week was the Retirement Equity Act of 1984. Although the measure affects both men and women, it was primarily designed to make it easier for women to earn pension rights. The bill pays special attention to women who break up their careers to have children. Senator Robert Dole explains.
We lower the age limits for those participating in plans from 25 to 21. And then we say that if you start working when you're 18, you're going to get credit when you're 18 rather than waiting until 22. We also have sort of break in service rules. If a woman wants to take out up to 5 years now to have a child, that's permitted without losing their benefits.
The bill also gives women rights to their husband's pension if their husbands die before retirement age. One of the original House sponsors of the bill was Democratic vice presidential candidate Geraldine Ferraro.
This legislation is built on the belief that marriage is a partnership, and that the work of both spouses should be rewarded with the retirement benefits they have earned together.
The Reagan administration pushed hard for the bill as a symbol of concern for women's rights, and the president has said he'll sign it. When asked if she'd attend the ceremony, Ferraro said yes, if she's invited. On Friday, the Senate completed the family-oriented trio of bills by okaying $10 million to build a national center for missing children. Ann Compton says the center will help parents find the more than 1 million children who disappear from their homes every year.
It means that families will have a hotline number they can call, and all information from across the U.S. will come to one central place. The Congress will also give grants to local missing children's organizations that can help families who have lost their children. Also, police will be able to hold a child for up to 5 days while they try to find the parent.
The bill now goes to a conference to iron out minor differences with the House version. But so-called women's issues weren't all that was facing the Congress this week. Wednesday, the administration began a full court press for more military aid for El Salvador. General Paul Gorman, head of the U.S. Southern Command in Panama, used newly declassified intelligence material to put forth the administration's case that the Salvadoran guerrillas are being armed by communist bloc countries and that the weapons reach El Salvador with the help of Nicaragua. ABC's State Department correspondent Barry Dunsmore attended the briefing for members of Congress and the press.
The administration pulled out all the stops. General Paul Gorman conducted an elaborate flip card, videotape, and weapons show and tell, backed up by captured maps and documents of recent vintage. The videotapes, shot at night by an American AC-130 using infrared cameras, are said to show, in one case, a shrimp boat loading cargo onto smaller boats and speeding away from Salvador's coast. Among the captured weaponry, a sight from a Vietnamese mortar, Bulgarian-made ammunition, and a Chinese grenade launcher.
Democrat Joseph Biden of Delaware, a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, was impressed with the material.
The bottom line is, there are, in my view, small arms going from Nicaragua with the knowledge of the Sandinistas into El Salvador.
Early the next morning, the Senate passed an appropriations bill containing the full $117 million in military aid for El Salvador the president had asked for. However, the House version of the bill contained no money for El Salvador. After a late-night session Thursday, House and Senate negotiators said they could reach no compromise on the matter and agreed to submit the aid for El Salvador to a vote of the full House. Late Friday afternoon, the House approved $70 million in aid for El Salvador. Wisconsin Republican Senator Robert Kasten applauded the House action.
What you're seeing here is Republicans and Democrats coming together in support of the bipartisan Kissinger Commission report. We're seeing the end, I hope, to some of the partisan political bickering that's been going on.
Some trouble this week for Republican Senator Mark Hatfield of Oregon. Bill Greenwood has more.
Attorneys for the Senate Ethics Committee are now reviewing the files of Oregon's Mark Hatfield to decide whether he improperly used his office to influence a business deal involving his wife. She is a licensed real estate agent and received $40,000 for work she performed on behalf of a Greek businessman. The Greek was involved in efforts to build an oil pipeline across Africa, and Senator Hatfield lent his official support to that project. But Hatfield emphatically denies any wrongdoing.
Later in the week, law enforcement sources said the Justice Department had formally authorized the FBI to begin a criminal investigation of the case. Tuesday, the Washington Legal Foundation, a conservative watchdog group, asked the House Ethics Committee to formally investigate the finances of Democratic vice presidential candidate Geraldine Ferraro. The request stemming from an exemption Ferraro claimed on her financial disclosure form, in effect stating that she had no knowledge and did not benefit from the financial holdings of the rest of her family, including her husband, a New York real estate man. Ferraro once again said she'd done nothing wrong.
I don't believe I violated the law. I will be filing a full disclosure statement within 30 days, which is the amount of time allowed to me as a vice presidential candidate, and I intend to do that.
Ferraro is listed as an officer in her husband's corporation, but maintains she has nothing to do with the business. The House Ethics Committee need not respond in any way to the Washington Legal Foundation's request. The question of taxes, will they go up, was once again being bandied around by Republicans and Democrats this week. On his second campaign swing through the South in as many weeks, Walter Mondale again insisted there was no choice involved in the matter.
The question will not be whether taxes are going to be raised or not. There's no alternative. The question will not be whether we squeeze the budget. We must. The question was, who will stand up with the people of this country and insist that the average family and the average worker get a break? And you're looking at them right here.
President Reagan, meantime, still vacationing at his ranch in California, seemed just a little annoyed as he was once again asked about Mondale's charges.
Well, Mondale is not telling the truth. I said it before, and I will say it again, and no matter how many of you try to put in a hedging line, we have no plans for, nor will I allow any plans for, a tax increase.
And later in the week, Treasury Secretary Donald Regan had the same message when he testified before the Congressional Joint Economic Committee.
There are no plans for tax increases in 1985. I'll repeat it again, Mr. Chairman. There are no plans for tax increases in 1985 by this administration.
Some of the confusion over the administration's intentions was fostered by the vice president himself, George Bush. Monday, Bush had just finished lunch with the president when he told reporters any president would keep his options open when it came to something like taxes. Wednesday, after a GOP rally in Kansas City, Bush was still explaining.
There is no difference whatsoever. The White House said that out there. I assume they're speaking for the president. Don Regan has said it. I've said it. And I'll just leave it right there. There are no differences.
Naturally, Walter Mondale took full advantage of the situation, this time speaking to the Communications Workers of America in Philadelphia.
As you know, I've challenged Mr. Reagan to 6 debate. Today I'd like to add a 7. I'd like to see a debate between Ronald Reagan and George Bush.
The reason for all the talk about taxes is, of course, the large federal deficit. And this week, both the non-political Congressional Budget Office and the Reagan administration released their separate projections on just how large that deficit is likely to be in the coming years. The two reports came to very different conclusions, as Sheila Cast reports.
The Reagan administration says federal deficits are generally falling and will dip below $165 billion in 1989. That contrasts with the Congressional Budget Office, which says deficits are rising and will reach $263 billion in 1989. Part of the difference is that the administration expects faster economic growth. But the big difference is that the administration expects interest rates to fall sharply from more than 9% now to about 5% 5 years from now.
The Congressional Budget Office says the big deficit will keep interest rates high. The report did say, however, that even though inflation is likely to pick up some, it will remain moderate next year. Friday, the Labor Department released the wholesale price index for July. The figures show inflation at the wholesale level rising 0.3% last month, the biggest increase since March. The main culprit was food, and analysts blamed the jump on last summer's drought. Tony Sargent has more.
Analysts aren't worried about a one-month rise in wholesale prices. Most of them still don't see much inflation for quite a while. Last month, the cost of meat, fish, and potatoes ready for grocery stores pushed the index up. But if this year's farming weather doesn't turn unexpectedly bad, there is no stretch of big food price rises ahead.
But second quarter balance of trade figures released this week show the country is still importing much more than it is selling abroad. In the second 3 months of the year, the trade deficit stood at more than $26 billion, an all-time high. On Wall Street, profit-taking put something of a dent into the summer rally. The Dow ended the week up 16 points on very heavy volume. Amtrak and the Federal Railway Administration announced this week they'd be inspecting every inch of the 22,000 miles of track used by Amtrak over the next few weeks. The inspection is supposed to help restore public confidence in the railroad system after a series of fatal Amtrak accidents. The Federal Aviation Administration has also announced a plan to improve the air controller system. Actually, FAA Administrator Donald Engen says the idea is mostly to improve working conditions for the controllers and admits it won't do much to help get planes off the ground any sooner. If you'd traveled through any of the nation's major airports lately, you know that flight delays are becoming more and more common. Now, a couple of congressmen say they're going to do something about that, too. Vic Ratner explains.
One reason there are so many delays in the air these days is that too many airlines are trying to squeeze too many flights in at the same time. 51 flights are scheduled to land in Atlanta, for example, within 15 minutes every day, and that just doesn't work. So Georgia Democrat Elliot Levitas and New York Republican Guy Molinari, who head the House subcommittee studying air traffic, suggest that the airlines and the government get together to reduce that kind of overcrowding. And they're warning the airlines that if there is not a voluntary agreement, then Congress may vote to let the Federal Aviation Administration decide who gets to take off at 8 a.m. and who has to wait. Vic Ratner, ABC News at the Capitol.
On Friday, Eastern Airlines asked the CAB for permission to discuss the scheduling problem with other airlines. Such talks would normally be prohibited under antitrust laws. But whether your plane gets off the ground on time or not, it's certainly getting cheaper to fly. The no-frills airline, People Express, announced this week that it will begin flying between Chicago and the New York area for as little as $59. United has said it will match People's price, and so has American. Those mysterious explosions in the Gulf of Suez, Red Sea area, claimed more shipping casualties this week amid speculation that Iran and perhaps Libya are responsible. Terry Taylor has more from London.
In a speech monitored on Tehran Radio in London and Tel Aviv, Ayatollah Khomeini said that Iran did not support the mining of the Red Sea and the Gulf of Suez, in which more than 20 ships have been damaged in the last month. On Tuesday, Tehran Radio editorialized in support of the damage caused to freighters in the region because it would keep the superpowers out. And that led some Western commentators to speculate that the incidents were backed by Iran, although some information points to the involvement of Libya. But Iran is not involved, according to Khomeini. In today's monitored speech, he blasted Tehran Radio's treatment of the story and called for the Tehran Radio reporter to be taken into custody. Terry Taylor, ABC News, London.
Friday, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak said the Suez Canal would be closed to any country connected with the mines, and added Egypt is 70% sure it's the Iranians and Libyans. British and French minesweepers are joining Egyptian ships already at work, and four U.S. mine-hunting helicopters should go into action in the area sometime next week. The Israeli president this week asked labor leader Shimon Peres to form the country's next government, but Peres has so far been unable to come up with a coalition to form a majority in the parliament. A report released this week by the Congressional Office of Technology Assessment sent shivers down the backs of many Southern Californians. The report said toxic wastes from the Stringfellow acid pits near Riverside are threatening the water supply for some 500,000 Southern California residents. Penny Newman is president of Concerned Citizens in Action.
Many of the things that we have been saying about the threat to the Chino Water Basin, about needing to remove the chemicals that exist underneath the clay cap, the source of pollution, rather than just trying to patch and plug it and keep it in the canyon, have been reinforced in this thing.
The report said the toxic wastes could filter into the Chino Water Basin within a year, and that even extensive cleanup efforts may not be enough to stop the pollution. Shortly before adjourning Friday, the House overwhelmingly passed a bill that would expand the nation's Superfund for toxic waste cleanup to more than $10 billion over the next 5 years. The Superfund was originally capitalized at $1.6 billion. The Senate has not voted yet on the bill. The judge who presided over the proposed Agent Orange settlement reached earlier this year held a hearing this week in New York. The agreement between the vets and seven chemical companies which produced Agent Orange during the war calls for a $180 million trust fund to be formed to deal with the medical problems of vets exposed to dioxin. However, many of the veterans said the settlement wasn't enough. James Burge is one of them.
You can't give $180 million to a bunch of veterans and expect them to go away. It figures out approximately to $2,000 a veteran. And myself, I spent that much on gas and newspapers following this since it started. And I've been involved in this since the beginning.
Not everyone felt that way, though. Frank McCarthy is a member of Agent Orange Victims International.
A lot of these veterans in these little groups out here, they make money off Agent Orange victims. They make money by this cause being continued on. They don't care about the people that are going to be helped by the trust fund. They only care about themselves.
Judge Weinstein will be conducting similar hearings around the country for the next few weeks before giving final approval to the Agent Orange settlement. Federal law enforcement officials this week announced the end of a two-year investigation into illegal quaalude trade. John Quinones has details.
57 people were indicted, 18 of them arrested here in Miami as part of the biggest crackdown ever on an international quaalude trafficking ring. The suspects are charged with conspiring to ship 54 tons of pills and powder to the U.S. for the manufacture of the depressant methaqualone, better known as quaaludes, a hypnotic sedative used mainly by young adults. 22 and a half tons of the drug were confiscated in four countries, all bound for the United States. Drug agents say Operation Hammerhead was so successful, they believe they virtually wiped out the illicit supply of quaaludes in the United States. John Quinones, ABC News, Miami.
Another investigation reached its conclusion this week. The investigation into who was behind the racist letters sent to some African and Asian countries, telling them to keep their athletes away from the Summer Olympics in Los Angeles. Attorney General William French Smith made the announcement to the American Bar Association meeting in Chicago.
A thorough analysis, including linguistic and forensic techniques, reveals that they are classic examples of a Soviet forgery or disinformation operation. They were intended to aid the Soviets in justifying their boycott of the Olympics and to gain the support of non-communist bloc countries.
The letters had been written on the stationery of the Ku Klux Klan. None of the countries which received the letters kept its athletes away from the games. The recent hot weather may have had something to do with two nights of what local police are calling rioting in Lawrence, Massachusetts this week. John McKenzie was in Lawrence on Thursday.
Soon after the sun set, the violence began. Gangs totaling several hundred roamed through a housing development, hurling rocks and bottles and firebombs at one another and at the police. By 10 o'clock, city councilors declared the situation out of control and called for police reinforcements from the state and neighboring communities. They swept through a two-block area and at least 18 people were arrested. What began Wednesday night as a case of window smashing was called an all-out race riot last night. Whites versus Hispanics. John McKenzie, ABC News, Lawrence, Massachusetts.
Friday, the mayor of Lawrence announced the imposition of an 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew for the area. The case of John DeLorean went to the jury Wednesday, though officials say it could be a while before a verdict is reached. DeLorean is charged with conspiring to buy and sell cocaine to save his car company. We'll have our final story when World News This Week continues in a moment.
Do you know what happens to good kids when they run away? Listen.
I do what I gotta do. I mean, where's a 15-year-old gonna get a job, man? I think it's disgusting, revolting. But you gotta eat. And you gotta sleep.
If you're on the street, 3 months is a long time.
Yeah, you gotta live. I'm ashamed of it, too. I wasn't brought up this way. I come from really nice people. It was me that messed up.
If you're on the street, 6 months is forever.
I want to stay alive. But if I die, what the f***? It can't be much worse.
If you're on the street for a year, you're not gonna make it.
Hey, if you're thinking about running away, don't.
To learn how Covenant House saves good kids from the predators of the street, write to Covenant House, P.O. Box 2121, Times Square Station, New York, New York, 10108. Because life on the street is a dead end.
A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot.
Richard Burton died this week. The son of a Welsh coal miner, Burton was one of Britain's most famous Shakespearean actors by the age of 27. But he was probably as well known in this country for his Broadway role in Camelot and several successful movies. Burton was the most nominated actor who never won an Oscar and the most famous British actor never knighted. Many say the reason for this was his much-publicized private life, which became grist for world headlines when Burton married Elizabeth Taylor for the first time after meeting her on the set of Cleopatra. The death came as a shock to family and friends as well as the world because he had been described as looking tanned and healthy lately. Burton was struck by a cerebral hemorrhage last Sunday. He was 58. Burton was buried Thursday in the tiny Swiss village where he'd spent much of his free time. Greg Dobbs was there.
As loudspeakers carried the funeral service to the hundreds of people outside the church here, this town's retired pastor spoke inside of Burton, the man of religion, saying that Burton always packed two books in his suitcase, Shakespeare and the New Testament. But then the actor's daughter, Kate, alluded to the better-known Burton, reciting from the famous poem by Dylan Thomas, "My father," she said, "do not go gentle into that good night." At the graveyard, as the coffin entered the ground, cameras were clicking and the curiosity seekers gathered round. As Richard Burton had lived, he was left. Greg Dobbs, ABC News, Saline, Switzerland.
And those are the people and stories that made World News This Week. World News This Week was written and produced by Stephanie Martz. Directed by Jerry Welsh. Engineering by Tom Kennedy and Rick Kelman. I'm John Grimes, ABC News, New York. World News This Week is a presentation of ABC News.